The following program is produced and distributed by KETR.org. You can help by visiting KETR.org and clicking donate.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 2 of the Alliance World Coaches Show for 2018. We're here at Soccer Ray LaVentana in Greenville. We're going to lead off the show with our soccer coach, Neil Piper. He's got a run and get to practice tonight. So let's recap. Loss to Metro State. Let's get that one out of the way first. How did that game, the 6-0 loss? Or there's some positives to take from?
Yeah, the game ended. It was one of those games where we won a practice set going in, and we played a good team, we scored early, and we really didn't need it. But luckily, it was only the first game of the season, and we got a long way to go, but I think it'll be okay.
So that one in the heat as well, I'm sure that wasn't great. But
I mean, it's not the first time, in my history, but it's been a while. But sometimes, you need that to get going.
All right, then let's move on to the Saturday night match against Westminster, a new Division II team from up in Utah. Can get out and play us on their first day ever being a Division II team, oddly enough. That's kind of interesting.
Okay.
First day of full Division II members, we pulled out a 2-1 double overtime win, gave up the first goal, but came back and did a lot of good things there in the second half, especially even though there wasn't a score yet. So.
Yeah, I felt like, we talked to the team, and it was important to get out to a strong start, and we high pressure, and I thought we played well for the first 25 minutes. I thought we were on top, and they kind of scored against the run of play, and
I think we scored 5 against the under, and then we had a little bit out of there, and
I thought the second half of the offense was a little bit.
That did set up Izzy Ward's game-winning goal there with 9 seconds to play.
Yeah. That was fantastic. Westminster, very similar style to us. They score a lot of goals on set pieces. I felt like we dealt with their corner kicks for the most part pretty well. It was a nice win.
Looking ahead to this week, two matches against two future conference opponents. One is sort of a, not long-time rival, but somebody we've battled with in NCAA contention the last few years at DBU. Not really as short as a conference turnaround, but pretty quick to take on a pretty good team.
In my mind, Dallas Baptist is probably the best team in the region. They got the best players. They're big, fast, physical. They play a nice style. Fortunately for us, we've had historical success against them. But they're off to kind of a slow start for them. They play two good teams. But both games, they played really well. That's going to be a big test for us.
And then going down to San Antonio on Sunday to take St. Mary's, another good team who we've had a little bit of a history with.
St. Mary's more of a, I wouldn't say they're as good as DBU, but they're a scrappy bunch, and they're tough to beat down there. And that's going to be one of those games in San Antonio at noon, 1 o'clock.
Yeah, 1 o'clock on Sunday. That could be hot.
It's going to be hot, and it's never an easy win against St. Mary's. Mm-hmm. That's going to test our character going down there.
All right, and then a little bit, how does this first weekend, how do you feel, how does it set up for what you want to accomplish this year?
This first weekend, because of the injuries we had in preseason, this was almost like our preseason.
Yeah.
And, I'm glad we got out 1-1, and we're just looking to move forward, and fitness is the key to us, and the more games we play, the more fit we'll get.
All right, man. Well, I know you've got to get back to Commerce to practice to take on this big game against DBU Sunday at 1 o'clock against St. Mary's.
Yep.
Head coach Neil Piper from the Lions soccer team.
All right, thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our head football coach, Colby Garthel.
This show and others like it from KETR.org are made possible by generous contributions from listeners just like you. Donate today at KETR.org.
All right, we're back here on the Lions Roar Coaches Show, Episode 2, here at Taqueria La Ventana in Greenville. So we're back here with Coach Carthel, his first live Coaches Show, because we were in Wednesday practice last week on Monday for the Thursday game. That's not confusing at all. So Lions pull out a 37-36 double overtime win over A&M Kingsville. Give us a little bit of a rundown of how you saw the game play out, especially from the beginning, the little bit of a slow start to be expected in a first game, but then the Lions definitely turned it on late.
We did. It looked like we needed a few more practices for that one. We didn't play just really clean, but a lot of credit to the team we were playing. A&M Kingsville came in and ready to play, and we were a little sluggish getting out the gate, and obviously have some new players at some key positions and everything else, like everybody does. But we just weren't making plays. We were having costly turnovers and not playing just great on third down that first half, and found ourselves behind 13-0 there at halftime. But made some adjustments, gave them a rah-rah halftime speech, and we came out and fumbled the first play. So that shows you how good halftime speeches are. But it was a good, hard-fought game by our players. They never lost hope. They never lost faith in each other, and they battled back into the game, made clutch plays there at the end to give ourselves a chance to play in overtime, and then was able to pull out the victory in overtime against a really improved and, I think, good A&M Kingsville football team. Coach Wilkinson's done a good job with that group this offseason, and they're recruiting and a couple key additions in their coaching staff, and I think you could see they were a much better ball club than what we faced the year before, and I think they'll give some people some fits and win a bunch of games this year. So credit to those guys where credit is due.
Yeah, I think their offense, I mean, I cannot count how many different lineups and formations they used, and when you and I got the two deep from them, they had positions that sounded made up to me, but it works in their offense. They definitely had some new wrinkles compared to what I'd seen out of that team in the last 2 years.
Right. No, it was they were a talented ball club, and they did a good job, had a good game plan coming in. And we knew it was a little bit of a Trojan horse game, moving it to week one, and they're breaking in a brand-new defense coordinator. We had no film, had no idea really what they were going to do while we're breaking in a new quarterback and new guys on offense. So that, you know, I think we knew what to expect in terms of it was going to be a tough ball game, and it was every bit as tough as we thought it was going to be, and then some. You know, as I told everybody, I never dreamed we'd beat them so bad. You know, but 1 point victory counts. It's a W, and it'll be a W the rest of the year, and next year, and the year after that. And that's all that matters, you know, is to find a way to win a game. And games are hard to win in college football. It's hard to win in any sport, but, you know, it's two teams. They both have scholarships and good coaches, and so we were happy to get the W.
The first score of the game for the Lions came in the third quarter, and you said we had a lot of youth out on the outside receivers, especially this week. Matt Childers, the redshirt freshman from Henderson, getting his, I think it was his second catch of the game, maybe third, and he scores a touchdown on a good play up the middle. I thought Matt did a really good job, and also with Preston Wheeler getting his first real extended action in that first start. That's a lot of young guys who had a lot of important snaps.
It was, and we know we're young, but that's not an excuse. We got really good young players, and we expect to win and expect to perform at a very high standard, whether you're a freshman or you're a senior. You know, if you're playing as a young guy, that means you're better than a lot of older guys, because we've got a quality team that's been built, I think, the right way over the past 5 years. So, but it was, you know, two guys on the outside at the X and Z receiver. Both of them are in their third semester of college. And so it was good for them to play in a tight game like this and be the main go-to guys. I mean, Chance Cooper on the outside, he had played as a backup last year, and I don't know, might have had
four catches.
Yeah, on the year. So now those are the primary targets out there. I thought Preston threw some good balls, and we quit running on a few routes and didn't play the ball like we're capable of playing, and it takes a little bit of time to get on the same page. But those guys did, and I think everybody saw a much more productive offense that second half.
And then we talk about the youth on offense. There's also some very important experience. Ovia Revu averages over nearly 4.5 yards of carry and gets that touchdown in the first overtime. The first overtime was the Ovi show. I mean, he just ran over people for four straight plays.
Right. I think some of that comes back to our training and Coach Stoner and just the physical shape that our players are in. And we were excited about our offensive line that trotted out there, and it was a senior, two sophomores, and two redshirt freshmen. And they were able to do a good job. I mean, Kingsville, Coach Buff, their defense coordinator, threw everything in the kitchen sink at us, and they did a good job picking up most of it. And there were some times where we just didn't have enough people to block as many as he was bringing. And so, but through the game, as the game wore on, I think our conditioning and the shape that those guys are in up front, we were able to really, you know, impose our will a little bit at times there in that overtime in terms of running the football. We're not known as a running team, so when you hand the ball off four straight times and score a touchdown in overtime, that's shows you're doing something right and they're in pretty good shape to be able to do that to a good team like Kingsville.
And our two other experienced players who caught touchdown passes, Vincent Hobbs, he had a big one there in the third quarter, and then the overtime game-tying touchdown for Marquise Wimberly on that route on fourth down. That was a fantastic throw and a fantastic catch. Those guys both had huge catches. They combined for 14 receptions and 136 yards. That's very important from your seniors there.
Right. Those are two big-time playmakers that are coming back. I know Hobbs is on several preseason All-American lists. And we expect those guys to make big plays, and we're going to try to feed them the ball every chance we can, depending on what a defense gives us. We're not going to just throw it to them if they're covered. But we had some good matchups in there that, you know, last touchdown. You know, a lot of credit goes before the catch, you know, to Marquise, and you go back and watch it, how he ran his route, how to get off the line, and kind of froze that corner, and the slants. Well, he just throws and catches in football, but it's hard to set it up. It doesn't just automatically happen. So credit those guys and the work they do throughout week and in practice to put themselves in position to make those kind of game-changing plays.
Moving over to the defensive side of the ball, Brooks sat off and Mark Westbrook, each with eight tackles, but two interceptions from the first one I want to talk about, Jalen Edwards-Cooper on that tip ball. It was tipped up in the air and it was up there for a while, but he still had to make a heck of a play on that ball. And I felt that, like, that gave us some early momentum, even though we didn't turn it into score. I think it felt very important at that moment in the stadium.
Yeah, it was just our first time out there. We started the game on defense, and with the new defense coordinator, Scott Power, and he's done a good job, a great job. You know, we had about 17 practices to get ready to play a really good and complicated offense in A&M Kingsville. And so those guys did a good job getting aligned, and that was a great play by Jalen, very acrobatic. He was already up in the air, and the ball got tipped, and he contorted his body another way and tipped it up to himself and did some things that you or I can't do because we're not good athletes.
No. But no. Well, I won't speak for you, but I know I'm not a good athlete.
Oh, you are a terrible athlete.
Yes, I'm the worst.
Yeah, one of the worst I've seen.
Yes.
But anyway, it was a really good play by Jalen, and, the other turnover late with Reggie Kincaid on a big third down stop to get us the ball back and a chance to get that game-tying field goal. And we had another – Nima had another really good interception that was –
It was almost back, as acrobatic as Jalen's was.
Called back on a penalty that, our blitzer, he was in the air and tipped the ball and landed on the quarterback and got called for roughing the passer. So
if you say so. I mean, I thought the tip ball negated that.
Football's getting soft a little bit, but it's, I guess, for a good reason.
Lions, I haven't figured it out either. I'm trying to get the numbers here. 11 tackles for loss and 3 sacks, getting behind the line a lot in that game, especially Big Mike Anoha wound up with 2.5 sacks, 3 tackles for loss, 5 quarterback hurries. That is a lot of pressure on the quarterback from one man.
No, he had a really good first game to start his senior season. He's an NFL prospect and fed a lot of traffic with scouts NFL personnel coming through. And it's very obvious why. He showed that he is the dominant player and played really hard and played a lot of snaps. And so we're anxious to see what Big Mike can do this year. I think he's, you know, off to a good start and has a chance to have a really, really good year this year.
Moving on to the special teams, the resurgence of the double punter with Jake Viquez and Tristan Perry. Tristan averaged 44.5 on his, Jake 38.2. Like, sounds a little low compared to the 44.5, but 38, that's still a really good punt average. The punt game, I thought, was exceptionally strong when we had to.
It was. Both those guys have done a really good job of, improving over the offseason and had a great camp and had some really big punts in the game. Jake had one out of our end zone that went up for about, 45, 46 yards. And, his average would have been better. He kind of shanked that last one when we decided to punt after the penalty and would have liked to have pinned him down a little bit. But, not always perfect, but still, you have a shank kick and you still average, 38 yards per punt. That's pretty good. And no returns. I don't think they had a single return on us, and that always helps your net punting average, which is net punt is what I care about more than just how far they kick it. And so they had a good night and really you know, special teams, we always pride ourselves on winning that facet of the game. And I think if you paid attention to this one, we were able to win the game with special teams.
Yeah, the punt return and kickoff return especially. Reggie Kincaid averaged 40 yards per kickoff return. He had a 45 and a 35, both in the second half, and both set up very important drives. I believe he ranks third in the country in kickoff return average at 1 week into the season. Mm-hmm. But that's still 40 yards of kickoff return. I mean, kickoff returns are always longer than punt returns, but 40 yards as an average is still a ton.
It was, and you can probably add to that because he brought that first one out from about 7 or 8 yards
deep.
Yeah,
if it was the NFL, that's a 47-yarder.
And we needed a spark. We didn't have a lot going. We just fumbled that first play of the second half, and defense did a tremendous job going out there and putting the fires out. It was a bad situation, and we practiced that. We practiced that very situation, going out there, being way down, and having to make a stop to keep the team in the game. And so they did, and Reggie get his big spark, got that offense going, and did a good job with the returns. And Ramsey came in. You know, we put one on the ground in the punt return game, and Ramsey stepped up and did a good job and had some electric returns there as well. So it was a good night.
I just got to say, it's got to feel good having a lot of weapons back there. I mean, you've always, in the past couple of years, you've had your Buck Wilson, your Sean Hooks. But, I mean, I believe you could, with this roster, you could easily put 5 or 6 different guys back there who have the speed, have the moves to make mm-hmm. people miss and break off a big return like that. That's got to be a great luxury for a team.
If you put 4 or 5 guys back there to return, they're probably going to run a fake on you, Josh.
That is true.
There's not enough.
I didn't say all at once.
Well, you didn't say not all at once.
Okay.
Yes. No, we have some talented players, and they do a good job. I'm not going to make this easy for you.
No, this is good. We got 11 more weeks of this, hopefully even more. We're going to, you know, I haven't had the Taqueria La Ventana Blue and Gold Margarita yet.
Right.
So I'm still on my game, and I can have the witty banner back and forth.
Fantastic.
And then, of course, our LSC Special Teams Player of the Week, and Christoph Martinez, 7 points. He's still the active career leader in Division II in every kick scoring category, top 5 in all NCAA divisions, and we've still got a minimum of 10 games to play.
Mm-hmm.
Makes that 34-yarder there with 20 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Another great game from a great player.
He sure did, and he's, you know, almost automatic. We felt really good. He was booming them from 57, 59 in mm-hmm. pregame, and we tried a 51-yarder and didn't have great operations on that snap, hold, and kick. But anyway, I still had a lot of confidence in him. That's what we were playing for. We knew at home we had a chance in overtime. So had the momentum. So just got it teed up for him. And, you know, again, we take it for granted sometimes. He's a very, very good kicker and went out there and made it. And then obviously it was perfect with the PATs, which mm-hmm. ended up being a difference in the ball game. You know, they missed 2 of them, and we were 4 for 4. So it's an important play. Anytime you take the field with that unit, you're trying to put points on the board, and just a tremendous job up front with our guys protecting and everything else. So, you know, can't say enough about those guys.
Moving into this next week's game against William Jewell, a couple extra days to get ready for a road game, another trip to Kansas City. Last time we got to go to Kansas City, we picked up a trophy. I don't think we have one for this game. But we have happy memories of Kansas City for sure.
Right. It was a good time last year up there. So anxious to get up there and play, you know, William Jewell. They came down here last year and everything. It's a good, you know, D2 game for us, which is important in terms of playing D2 opponents. And it's hard, you know, sometimes with the close scheduling. So sometimes you have to make a little jaunt and all the way to Kansas City. But hopefully we can get up there and show some real improvement from what we did last year, and hopefully we can find some good barbecue to eat as well.
I hear they have some.
I hear they have some, and hopefully by Saturday at noon we're ready to play a ball game and go out there and you know, like I say, show some improvement because we got plenty of work to do from week one.
William Jewell had their first game at Drake in Des Moines, Iowa, get lightninged out with, I believe they played about 7 or 8 minutes that ball game. I'm sure film exchange and film study is got to be a little short this week with that.
Well, you know what? It's uncharted territory. Hadn't been in that situation yet. But we did go ahead and exchange film, and we just had to click ours down and only exchange 7 minutes of the game. That way it's fair to each of us. But, yeah, it didn't take long to break the film down this week. So GAs were excited, not as much to break down and input and everything. But it you know, should be a good opportunity for us to get up there and like I say, show some improvement because it's a long season. And we're not anywhere near playing at the level that we need to be. But we just got to go up there and find a way to win in our ball game, try to get to 2-0.
All right. Well, we'll be live on the Lions Sports Network. You'll be listening to the replay of this show at 11 o'clock in the morning, the pregame show at 11:30, and then kickoff straight up noon from Liberty, Missouri and Green Stadium. Thanks a lot, Coach Carthel. We'll talk to you again next week. This is Head Coach Colby Carthel. This is the Lions Roar Radio Show here at Taqueria La Ventana. We're going to take a quick break and bring back our nationally ranked volleyball coach, Craig Case.
There you go. Go Lions.
The program you're enjoying right now was made possible by a group of folks just like you who make contributions to public radio. Support programs just like this one. Visit KETR.org and click donate.
All right, we're back here on the Lions Roar Coaches Show from Taqueria La Ventana in Greenville. We're here with our head volleyball coach, Craig Case, coming off a big 3-1 weekend. Everybody, yes, give him a round of applause. Our team had a heck of a weekend up there at the Colorado Premier Challenge in Denver. You and I talked about it last weekend, how it's a very interesting tournament. It's a true tournament with the pool play and brackets, and it came down to every possible tiebreaker to decide those brackets. We wind up beating the defending national champions and the tournament champions. So somehow they win a tournament while losing to us. But let's go. We'll just run down. We'll give the recap at the beginning. Beat number 2, number 3, and number 10 in the country. Let's start with number 2, Concordia St. Paul, taking that one in 5.
Yeah, that one, you know, we knew that was they're going to be the best team we were going to play probably all year. We were excited about that. You know, we split the first two sets, and then middle of the third, you know, we really felt like we could play with them and we could go for the win. And so, you know, we just started really gearing everything up, trying to go all out and try to get that W. And I was really proud of, our team was really excited for the opportunity. And a lot of times you get teams that are excited for that opportunity, and then when they get the opportunity, they go, well, you know what? They are a lot better than we thought, so maybe we're okay losing this one. But they had a lot of fight, and we played a lot of different players. And, you know, one of the things I thought was interesting is, if I remember correctly, we only had one or two players with 10 or more kills. And then we had 12 different players that registered kills. So we really had a good balanced attack in that match. And I think that was one of the biggest advantages we had in that match, is we had so many different weapons that we could go after them with.
It was a very balanced match statistically. And then my good friend Josh Deere, the SID at Concordia St. Paul. This is, like, I don't want to spend too much time on the opponent here, but you and I have talked about this numerous times. They are the gold standard of volleyball almost at all levels. They've won 8 out of the last 10 national championships. The loss was Concordia's first against an unranked opponent since 2015, and their first against an unranked conference opponent since a four-set loss to West Florida in 2012, also in the Premier Challenge. I mean, that is a team that, especially when you're that evenly matched in terms of how the statistics come out, pulling out a win against a team like that is just huge.
Yeah, when we were going over the scenarios that we thought we could win in with the coaching staff, winning in 5 was not one of them. You know, I really thought if it went 5, I thought we'd be into trouble. And then, you know, we were able to manage some things in the fourth set there, and then we started real fast in the fifth. And again, we had some really key bench players coming in that fifth set. And, you know, that's just how our team's going to be all year. You know, we've got a lot of really good kids that are good players that care about their teammates, and they're not going to let each other down. And we're going to bank on that, and hopefully it continues to pay dividends.
So pretty much as soon as that match ends, you begin warm-ups for Metro State, who's the last – we lost to them in the NCAA tournament last year, kind of a revenge match, but it's their first match of the day. Our second, you just got over an hugely emotional five-set win, and then you get to play a team that good in their home opener. Wind up losing in 4, but, I mean, you don't want to say, hey, we didn't get swept, but, I mean, that was a competitive match from top to bottom, even with, I'm sure you're still slightly adjusting to the altitude and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, I was proud of how hard our team played all weekend, and that was probably the match I was most proud of, their effort level. I mean, they were fighting. I mean, there was times when it really looked bleak, and they were still fighting and trying to make the plays that we were trying to make, and I was, you know, I was pleased with them. I wasn't terribly upset about that loss. And this is the strangest post-match speech I've ever given after the Concordia match. I was like, hey, you guys, great news. You just knocked off the defending national champions. bad news is in 45 minutes, we got to play another volleyball match.
That's one of the weirdest things about your sport. I mean, I was at a different tournament all weekend. It's like you're either you're done for the day, you have a six-hour break, or, hey, let's turn around and play in 20 minutes.
Let's play again. So, you know, and I thought we started out real competitive too. So, you know, that Metro match was a tough match. They beat us. And, you know, I don't think it was altitude related. I don't even know if it was, you know, energy. They played better than we did, and they knew what we were trying to do before we did it, and that helps when you get to watch a scout a five-set match right before you play somebody. But either way, you know, I was pleased with our effort, and the good thing about that is it highlighted some things that we weren't doing very well, both with chemistry and tactically. And we pointed those things out, and then the team did a really good job moving forward and adjusting those things. And those same things that hurt us on Friday against Metro became our strengths on Saturday, and that was real positive.
So Metro turns around and has to play Concordia. Concordia wins that. So everybody in the pool splits, and it comes down to tiebreaker. We'd won four of the nine sets we played. Concordia had won five of nine, and Metro had won four of eight. So we wind up going into the bronze bracket. And then the opposite bracket, Lewis, the number three team in the country, somehow winds up in the worst bracket because of the tiebreakers. If I remember right, we had to do the math. It was on the percentage of points every match in their pool went five and everybody split. So you wind up, you're figuring you're probably going to get the weakling of the toughest tournament in volleyball, and then you get the number three team in the country. Was that a motivating factor when you woke up on Sunday morning, or did it matter to the team, like, who they were going to play?
No, you know, I think, you know, we went up to win volleyball matches, honestly, we probably went more up to play our best volleyball and to see how we measured up against other really good teams. And, you know, we talked about it, and it was motivating, like, hey, you know, this is the number three team in the nation. If we want to be ranked at that level, then we got to beat teams like this. And if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best type of attitude. And short of the Ric Flair woo, we talked about that a lot.
Woo!
Talked about that a lot during the tournament. But it was I don't know that it motivated us as much as they were number three and we just played number two, as much as, hey, let's go out and let's play our best volleyball and see what happens.
In that Lewis match, you drop the first, go back and forth, win the second, fourth, and the fifth. They out-hit you in terms of percentage. The statistics are not as even. We had way more kills, way more assists, way more digs than them. That is looking at the stat sheet is a very confusing match from an outsider's perspective. So what was the key to pulling out that one in five?
Well, you know, I think it was style of play. You know, when we were controlling the ball, we could play our style of play. When they were controlling the ball, they played their style of play, and it was really just a battle of first contacts to see who could get into their game and play their game the longest. You know, unfortunately, I thought we worked really hard on our first contacts to put us in position to ultimately beat them. And so it was a really fun match, and it was pretty exhausting afterwards. But it was a fun match.
Well, the good part about winning that one is, unlike the day before, you got a break until the bracket final.
We actually got to go back to the hotel room for 45 minutes.
Oh, got off your feet for a whole 45 minutes before a college sports contest. Wow. That's amazing. And then you take on Regis, who's one of the host schools, a regional power, ranked number 10 in the country, and then beat them in four. And if the first two didn't shock the D2 volleyball world, when you get all three of those in a weekend, you definitely made some noise.
Yeah, and they're really good. I wouldn't be surprised one bit if they ended up being one of the major contenders for the RMAC championship this year. They were a really good team, super well coached, good athletes. They were fun to play. And I thought the only difference in that match compared to the other three that I talked with our team about, and why I think we probably played our best in that match, even though it was our fourth and we were the most tired. But we responded to good volleyball really well in that match. And in the first three matches, you know, we'd go on a run, and then, you know, Concordia and Metro and Lewis, they would do something really good, and it would kind of turn us down a little bit, and we'd get down, and we wouldn't recover as fast. The response against Regis was, hey, if they're going to play good volleyball, we're going to play good volleyball. And so we just tried to keep matching their volleyball. And, you know, I really like the outcome of how we played in that match.
So the Lions wind up winning the bronze bracket. Fantastic effort. When you come into it, you look at the seeding, and it's one of those, you don't really say this until afterwards. I mean, we were, out of the 12 teams there, allegedly the 12th seed.
Correct.
We're probably supposed to go 0-4.
Yeah, we were supposed to go 0-4.
And get run out of the gym and not even be there. And then you wind up winning one of the three trophies that they give out at the end of the thing. Just the weekend as a whole, you said you're exhausted, but it's got to be one of the best exhausted you've had as a coach.
Yeah, you know, and the whole reason for that tournament, well, there's two reasons. One, you know, you really get to do a lot for your uncontrollables as far as NCAA regional rankings go. But then two, again, you're measuring yourself against 11 other great volleyball programs. And so you're able to see, hey, where are we at and where do we need to get to? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we talked a lot about in practice today, we talked a lot about all the good things we did. But then we also said, hey, but other teams did things better than us. And those are the things that we've got to start working on. And so it was a really fun time. And we were all kind of in the same – we all kind of had the same bunker mentality. We were just like, who's next? And, I mean, I forgot Regis is even nationally ranked. When we got done, I'm like, who are we playing next? And they're like, Regis. I'm like, good, let's go. And so afterwards, we went out and had dinner Saturday night, and we were able to get a room to ourselves at the restaurant we went to. And it was just a lot of joking around and a really good time. So it was a fun way to end that weekend. And now we got to turn our attention to conference play.
Lions now 6-2 on the season. We found out right before we came over here this afternoon for the first time since 1989, Lion volleyball is ranked in the top 25. Yes, yes. That is the appropriate response.
Yeah. You said it correctly. Before break, you said Coach Case was nationally ranked top 17. I think that's a little bit low.
You're probably the 17th best in the country at something. I just don't know what it is.
Well, I doubt that.
But so for the first time since 1989, and that's a team back then that went back in a really good run, yeah, and everything, went from not even receiving votes last week to all the way up to 17th, and probably could have been higher if it was later in the year, that kind of thing. But that's got to be a really cool feeling, especially for some of those girls who have been through some not the best seasons, and now we're a power in the conference, and you're ranked in the nation.
Yeah, you know, it's fun because I've got a lot of really good friends in the volleyball community, and so a lot of them were reaching out to me over the weekend and texting me, and Sunday night I had a lot of phone calls, and it was just fun to, you know, one of my buddies accused us of cheating.
I'm not sure how you do, but that...
I asked him to explain it because it's the only way I can explain it. But it's fun to jump in there, and our team's just worked really hard. I think fitness has been a major priority in our program. I think our girls have bought into our philosophy as far as those things go. Coach Farmer does an incredible job with our team. I mean, we're relatively injury-free, and, you know, we're playing as hard as we did mid-season last year. So for him to have our team as ready to go as he has, he's done a great job. And our players have bought into what he's doing, too. And so, you know, there's really not a secret sauce or a recipe right now, just besides just, again, trying to be in a position to play our best volleyball every time.
Three matches this week coming up, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Moving west, headed stopping and playing Southern Arkansas at Dallas Baptist on Thursday afternoon. I think we'll probably go over and check that one out for you just because it's Thursday afternoon. And then Angelo and Tarleton, the kind of the more recent traditional powers in the Lone Star Conference. And I jump right into the thick and some of the two of your four more important matches in the LSC and regionally down the line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the other thing, too, about the Lone Star Conference is there's no easy night. Angelo, I think if they would have been in our position in the pool, they probably would have done just as well as we did this weekend. They had a really good weekend at the Premier as well. Tarleton State went out and had a good weekend. And I know those coaches and those teams both have really good memories. Mm-hmm. And last year on opening weekend, we beat both of them in five at home and really kind of set the tone for our season last year. And so they know that and they remember that, and they're going to be ready and they're going to try to return the favor. But, you know, we got a different team this year, and I think we could do some things we couldn't do last year. And I'm excited to see what happens this weekend when we kick off conference play.
All right, 5 o'clock Thursday against Southern Arkansas at DBU, 7 o'clock Friday at Angelo, and 2 o'clock in Stephenville against Tarleton. Good luck, Coach Case, and the Lion volleyball team. We're going to take one last break. We'll bring our AD, Tim McMurray, up. This is the Lions Roar Coaches Show at Taqueria La Ventana. This is the part where you applaud for the Coaches Show. We'll be right back after this break.
Hello, this is Alex Shiloh from the Lions football team. The Lions Champion Fund is the official support unit for Lion Athletics.
Donations to the LCF go directly to providing a best-in-class experience for all 436 Lions student-athletes. I am Sydney Reyes from the Lion volleyball team.
For more information about the LCF, you can visit lionchampionsfund.com.
Again, that's lionchampionsfund.com, and thank you for your best-in-class support.
We're back here on the Lions Roar Coaches Show from Taqueria La Ventana and Greenville, here for our final segment with our Director of Athletics, Tim McMurray. Yes, much applause.
That drew a smattering of applause.
I believe the percentage in the restaurant was high, though, so I'll give you that. So let's look back to Thursday night. It's one of those when you have a TV game, you have a school night game, the first event on campus with students coming back, you do a lot of planning, and you and I have been doing this for a while, but until you see it happen, there's always a little bit of that unknown. Will they actually show up? Did we do the right things? That kind of thing. And I think our questions were answered. Our students showed up like potentially the best they ever have.
Absolutely. And a few things. And I want to, many of our teams here tonight, just an unbelievable job by our group, because we can do all the planning and have all the great ideas and have
allegedly
all the
great ideas.
Have all the great anticipation leading up to the first game after a national championship, but if we don't have quality people executing it, it doesn't happen. So kudos to your group, our development team, compliance, business, facilities, game operations, and certainly our football program and our student athletes. But what flipped it a little bit on Thursday that was really unique to see, you don't get that kind of student turnout if you don't have campus life and student development. And we had our Dean of Students, Dr. Tommy Newsom, on last week on this show, and it was unbelievable. I mean, you can tell that all those things that we talk about in our meetings all the time about dorm storms and being out on campus and getting the message out and telling our story to our students. Our students were coming up to me and coming up to others on this group about, football game. I'm getting out there at 4, like they had to tell us what time they were arriving. And then to watch, and I'm telling you, you know, you and I talked about this. If you couldn't see logos and you didn't know what school it was, I mean, that run out could have been in the Big 12.
That was amazing.
It could have been in...
It gave me chills.
Any Division I game that was on TV this weekend, it was unbelievable. So our students showed out for a school that we're still establishing traditions, because to be a tradition, you have to do it more than once.
Yes.
I don't know much about that, but...
That sounds right to me.
That does sound right, yes. Yeah. And so this show's now a tradition. We've done it twice.
Okay,
so
sweet.
There we go. No,
a traditional host.
But our students started a great tradition, and when the first email I have on Friday morning after the game is from the provost to Dr. Newsom and I with President Rudin copied, can we do that every game? The answer is we certainly can find a way to make that happen. And I think it's just tremendous. So for me, to see that kind of crowd on a Thursday night, you know, for our alums and our community, I get it's a school night, all that. It's a school night for our students too, but they're, you know, young and spry and energetic.
A little more bounce back than some of us.
So just couldn't be more proud of the way we showed out. And, you know, certainly we kept fans around. My first comment to Coach Carthel after the game was that if you had told us double overtime, we would have spread out some of the great promotions that you and Taylor
put in place. Yeah, I was going to say, I think I got 3 extra media timeouts that I wasn't ready for.
So just kudos all the way around. And certainly we don't plan to keep everybody around for a 4-hour game, but as long as there's one more point on the left side of the scoreboard than the right, we'll take it every time.
Yeah, and it seemed I'm up in the press box for every game, and so I don't get to participate in the tailgate, and I don't get to visit in the We Are Lions Lounge with our Letterman and that kind of thing. But it seemed like from where we were, the excitement level was you could feel it through the windows, which I'm not going to say it's not always the case at every game, because if you win by 8 touchdowns,
right,
yeah, you don't feel it quite as much, that kind of thing.
So let's talk about that for a minute. You're up in the press box, but you were up there in a different role. So talk about that. You were really running the game from up top, sort of like a coordinator would in the football vernacular. What was that like? Because, one, I thought it was tremendous. So that's the lead into your answer, I guess, unfortunately. But in all seriousness, you and I guess Connor Marino, our associate for internal operations, 2 years ago brought Roger Emmerich to the table. Roger, for Dallas media and sports folks and sports fans.
He's a Texas Radio Hall of Famer.
And if you've ever been to AT&T Stadium or Texas Stadium, for that matter, you've probably heard mm-hmm. Roger's voice.
He's only been at AT&T.
Okay.
But yeah, you've heard it. I mean, we have the same PA announcer as the Cowboys.
Yeah.
He's got more stories than anybody I've ever met. And I get to sit there with him for 5 hours.
And I was just saying, so I think he had the best seat in the house. But talk about what it was like from just primarily the media relations role to more the external game environment, fan experience. Did you enjoy it? How did it look from up top?
I'm here to have a good time. I'm here to party. That's what it is. And when the band's off getting ready for their halftime performance, you're trying not to leave too much dead air and that kind of thing, and get the right moment and get more defense-oriented songs and offense-oriented songs and some that are subtle jabs at an opponent, or we hit that field goal right there to force the overtime, and I don't know if anybody caught it, but I played I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get that feel and everything, and I'm friends with some people who do that for the big leagues and that kind of thing, and I don't know how they do that 41 nights a year. Yeah. But it was fun. I'm still getting used to it. It was weird. I was a lot more locked in the live stats than I normally am for a home game, because that's what I've done for so many years, and I all the confidence in the world in Marcus, but I'm just watching, because if one weird play happens, that can throw off the rest of his game.
Right.
If somebody laterals a punt fumble, that's the end of the world. Yeah, I just gave him a headache just by saying all those words together. And so it was a lot of fun, and the more comfortable I get with it, it'll be even better. But now I'm done talking about myself.
No, it's all right. It was a fun. It was a great opener all the way around. Fans and support team KTR, everybody came together and really made it a special night. Now we got to duplicate it on Community Day and make it even better on the 22nd.
What'll be even better with that one than this? It's a Saturday evening, so people. There's just more people that can make things on Saturday evenings than there are on Thursdays.
Absolutely.
That's just math. But then we've got a lead-in. We've got the volleyball team. Who do we play that day? They play Midwestern State at 2 o'clock that day. So you've got 2 o'clock is when an hour after tailgate starts. You can get an hour of tailgating in, go watch us whip up on Midwestern, hopefully in 3. Keep that one short so that we can get back to the tailgate and then tailgate for a big.
Well, Coach Case just guaranteed it. See, if you were here, Laventani, you would have seen it. Yeah, guarantee it. Live.
Yeah, we should have moved the camera around, but darn, yeah. we missed the guarantee.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's going to be a heck of a day we've got Bodark Bash going on in town. There's a lot of really good things happening that day specifically. And we've got the volleyball opener a week from tomorrow night. That should have a great crowd for that, especially, I've learned this, our students really like a winner.
Yeah.
And I had, as soon as we posted that we'd beat number 2, 3, and 10 in the country, there's a lot of student response on social media, the hey, watch out for these guys, from people that I normally only see talk about football.
Absolutely. And that's, to me, that's been the fun thing about the last 3 years of success, that certainly Coach Carthel, Coach Case, Coach Piper, our fall sports, we build around that, well, I'm going to go to this, I'm going to go to that, I'm not going to go out of town, I'm not going to go back home. I'm not going to go see a friend at another school or back in my hometown. We're building it around our fall sports, and our community slowly starting to do the same. I think there was a time here, and there may still be some of this, where we think Bodark Bash has to be on a weekend when we don't have a home football game. And as I was recently talking to some of our city leadership about, we should want more events. We should feed off of each other. We should be programming together and working together, and our city council and city manager Derek Farrell, I know, very much on board with that. Certainly our mayor Wyman Williams supportive of that, and I think when we can turn it into a community event where football obviously has the largest attendance, let that be the anchor, mm-hmm. but let that be the crown jewel on top of a great day of community and other athletic events.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. This week we've got our home cross-country meet starting at 5:45 at Centennial Park. It's their only home event for the year. George Pincock, our head coach, and Luke Scribner, they're out there coaching and stuff as well, and it's hard to – he elected to not come today because he said it's kind of hard to preview a cross-country season because all we've done is run and all we're going to do is
run. Well, you have to do it from a distance.
And that's the end of our show, folks.
They weren't paying attention.
That was pretty good. But we check out all the schedules on lionathletics.com. Our home event this week is the East Texas Shootout at Centennial Park on Friday night. We hope to see you there. Thank you for watching and listening to the Lions Roar Coaches Show here on lionathletics.com. I'm Josh Mank signing off. Go Lions.